Welcome to The Crumb, a podcast by Bake From Scratch. I'm your host, Brian Hart Hoffman, and I'm here to talk all about baking. The people, the culture, and the baked goods that make us run to preheat our ovens. I am so excited to have a very special guest joining me today on The Crumb. Belle English is here, and y'all, she is not only is she a talented chef, and I get to call her a good friend, but she is Williams-Sonoma's Culinary and Test Kitchen Director. Today, we're going to chat about her journey to that famous kitchen in San Francisco, the delicious recipes that she develops, and the new ones that appear in a brand new cookbook that I can't wait to tell you about. And then, of course, the holiday staple from Williams-Sonoma, peppermint bark, and a very, very fun product that Belle was a part of developing. Let's keep the intro short because the conversation's going to be long. Let's chat with Belle. Belle English is here. Welcome to The Crumb.
Brian Hart Hoffman, what an honor and joy it is to be talking to you. Across the country, but I feel like I'm right next to you.
I know. It's the one thing with podcasting is I'm like, could we just be in the kitchen together for this? Because
we already know, as discussed, we'd be like two bottles of wine deep.
Yeah.
Things would get crazy too soon. This is safer.
Yeah, we'll keep distance for the safety of a podcast where everyone can get nuggets of information. And then there'll be a video series that follows when we're in the kitchen together cooking and baking and drinking wine.
Oh my God, so fun. That's a dream come true.
Well, Belle and I have had obviously we have a lot of fun anytime we're together, but we have had the pleasure of working together during the years that I've been a part of the baking school program with Williams-Sonoma and Bake From Scratch. I even went to San Francisco to the Williams-Sonoma Test Kitchen, and Belle and I taught a class together in the same kitchen. It was a total blast. I can't wait to do more of that stuff. But before we get into this whole conversation about Williams-Sonoma, Belle English, pasta, Italy, and all the stuff that you make just so beautiful, let's rewind the footage and talk about a smaller Belle English that was a child in a very talented culinary household. She is the daughter of Chef Todd English. There's your plug for dad. But tell us about that journey. You know, I grew up in a family business. When I was a kid, mm-hmm. I definitely was not going to join the family media business. Ha ha, LOL. Life has its own way of bringing you back. And now 16 years later. So living the dream, honestly, I love it. And I think you and I even talked a little bit about this at some point in the past, but take us through it. The child of Todd English, now the test kitchen director, culinary director at Williams-Sonoma, very talented culinary family. Talk us through it.
Thank you, Brian, for that wonderful introduction. You know, I think from the family perspective, we'll go back to my birth story soon. No, from the family perspective, it's just so part of who I am. And I think you can probably say the same thing, whether I knew it or not. Growing up, it's just embedded in me. It's in my blood. It's my love language, feeding people. So I'm so grateful that I have such a rich culinary background. And both my parents are chefs. They are the greatest teachers of all time. So I'm so proud of it and so happy that, I mean, what a lucky way to grow up. So
did you go through a phase of resistance though? Like you knew they were talented, but you were not going to go in the culinary world? Or was it kind of a natural love language for you developing during that time?
Yeah, I think it was a natural love language. I mean, my favorite thing in the world, which I share with my family and so many other people, and my goal today as culinary director is to get people around the table to share a meal. I think that's where the magic happens. That's where the most love is always involved, eating delicious food, drinking delicious wine, telling stories, laughing your you-know-what off. Like those are just my favorite childhood memories. So I knew I always wanted to curate that and create those moments for other people. How was I going to get there? Because I grew up in the restaurant industry, I saw so much behind what the restaurant industry means and what it means to run a restaurant, a successful restaurant. It is blood, sweat, and tears. It is 24/7. And my parents inspire me every day because, you know, they had three young kids and two like kick-ass restaurants in Boston just rolling. And I'm like, how did you do that? I'm like, go home. I'm like, there is children. I don't even understand. So they just inspire me so much. But I knew because I had spent so much time in restaurants, I'd been working in restaurants, like maybe illegally since I was like 10. I used to run coat check. That was my first job in a restaurant.
Admitting to the child labor of a family business.
Yeah. This is right. But that's just what we did. Like parents aren't home, you know, we go to the restaurants. I'll tell you, my first job in a restaurant was actually coat check. And I used to run that coat check. Like it was $1 billion business.
There she
However, I would go home to go to sleep, you know, because I'm 10 and no one who left could find their coats because the coat person, me, was gone for the night. So that was, you know, that was a tough.
The early days of you learning a work ethic.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, oh, can't fall asleep on the job. Got it. So I think because I learned so, you know, hands on what the restaurant industry was like, I really want to explore what the food industry was outside of restaurants. And, you know, when my parents were just starting their careers, restaurants was kind of the only path to go down. You go to culinary school, you work in restaurants, you open restaurants, and that was kind of, it was kind of one dimensional. Now, these days, think about what we're both doing.
Right.
Social media, books, test kitchens. There's so many other food shows. There's so many other platforms that the food industry kind of envelops now. And so I was like, let me just go out and explore. I know the restaurants like the back of my hand. If somewhere down the line, that's where I want to go, which, you know, I have like 75 restaurant concepts in my notes app. Like I'm ready when the iron strikes. No, but yeah, I just want to explore elsewhere. So after working in restaurants, you know, pretty much my whole life, I went from the most terrible coat check hostess ever to slowly move my way up. I was also a terrible bar back. That was not for me. Then once I got into the kitchen, I was like, oh, okay, this feels right. So yeah. I did everything from expediter. I was on the line. I even ran the floors some nights. So I really kind of was lucky enough to explore really young. After that, I went to NYU for undergrad. And I actually got to create my own major, which in the Gallatin School, shout out to Gallatin, which is the greatest program because they really let you explore all your interests for 3 years. And then in the fourth year, they're like, okay, let's narrow this down, hone this in, really start to figure out what you want to take away from everything you've learned the last 3 years. So my major is called Understanding Beauty Through Art and Food, which when I graduated, which when I graduated, I'm like, oh, what the heck? Well, does that mean my parents are going to be so mad? What a waste of my education. However, if you think about it, the study of it was all about the experience of beauty through looking at art, photography, painting. A lot of my classes were in studio art. And then any class that wasn't in studio art was an interdisciplinary seminar on, you know, food writing, all very food related. And even if it wasn't food related, I would always like bring in baked good. I always bring in, you know, snacks for everyone. And I was like, all my projects actually are about food. So maybe I should, you know, look in that direction a little more. And then when I graduated, I got an internship at America's Test Kitchen. And I will say that internship was a pivotal part of my career because that's when I really fell in love with recipe development. And I realized, oh, wait, this is actually exactly where my skill set can be honed. It's very right brain, left brain at the same time, which is good for me. And, you know, America's Test Kitchen is like the mecca of test kitchens.
Absolutely.
And they really beat me into shape in a wonderful way to really teach me the discipline that it takes to develop a recipe. And I learned so much. I stayed on a little bit and then. That's where I really fell in love with recipe development and realized, okay, this is where I belong in this food world at this point in time.
And I love, you know, I want to jump back to a few things you said along that way.
Yeah.
Because one thing you do so well, and I know it's not even a fake portrayal just for social media, but you and your family, you guys love each other so, so, so much. I mean, you celebrate
really
everybody's milestones. You celebrate occasions, you celebrate the love mm-hmm. you share, you still celebrate that love that is so evident through sharing food. So everything you said about how you fell in love with food, it also is something that I see in your personal like connection and relationship with your parents, with your siblings. Like It is so genuine that I think I joke with you all the time. I'm like, I know you're staging this stuff because it just looks way too, but it's
it
not.
It looks way too good.
Yeah,
no,
you just, y'all exude it.
I'm so, thank you for saying that. I'm so lucky. My brothers and I are extremely close and my parents and I are really close too. Honestly, it is very, just social media can be so misleading because, you know, everyone puts out their prettiest, sure, best selves. And while that's true, I think you hit the nail on the head. My family and I are extremely close. And even, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 6. And to be honest, it was pretty nasty for a long time. And it still waves. And I think I actually take it as a blessing because it's why I'm so close to my brothers. It's because the three of us had to really stick together to get through, you know, the divorce.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we really had to learn how to create these individual relationships with my parents. But at the end of the day, it's so funny, like all of our connection comes back to food, because my parents are the ones who opened the restaurants together and they were in culinary school and worked together for so long. So even days, weeks, years, whatever, they're not talking, I will be like, call my mom and be like, what's that like onion soup that we used to eat? And she'd be like, oh my gosh, that was your father's recipe. This is what he did. Or like, call your father and tell him, like, you know, ask him about the cheese crackers in Connecticut, 1982 or whatever it is. Yeah. And they still, amongst the chaos of that divorce brings, I'll leave it at that. But at, you know, amongst the chaos, food is always at the center of what we do, what we're talking about, and how we show love to each other.
And I love that. It always, and I've told you before, it comes with such, mm-hmm, an honest portrayal, even just you now talking about the divorce and what that really means, but then also what brings you back together and binds them and you as a family unit.
Yeah.
Really, really special. One thing you did leave out when you were giving us your journey that I am going to be so happy to bring up. You got to tell us about curly cakes.
Yes.
Tell us, Belle English, what it was like to run a cupcake shop at such a young age, not just the coat check.
Not just the coat check. Thank you for bringing that up. It's like a different life ago. So when I was 16, 17, so in high school, my crazy father, crazy brilliant father, but crazy father, he was like, you've always talked about cupcake shops, because I always used to draw cupcake shops when I was like 7 until I was like, you know, doing arts and crafts in my room as a lame freshman in high school, instead of being out, you know, with the boys or something. I was like drawing concepts for this cupcake shop. So I finally, you know, he came to me, said, there's this space in Boston. Do you want to do this with me? And I was like, heck yeah. I had no idea what that meant at the time. I was just like, this is a dream opportunity. I'm going to use, you know, his connections and his business as a, you know, I'm going to use it to my best ability, I guess, is the honest truth. And like, let's see what happens. And I didn't even know it at the time, but in retrospect, what a crazy, lucky, privileged, beautiful place I was in to even explore that piece of my brain and my life at that time. It's just on another level, but I was lucky enough to do it. And we were actually on a trip and I drew on the back of a cocktail napkin, as most brilliant ideas come to be.
That is the truth.
Isn't it? Just at dinner, it was sparked. I drew the logo on the back of the napkin. He actually still has a napkin, which is adorable.
Oh, I love that.
And we drew the logo for Isabel's Curly Cakes. And it was at the time when cupcake shops were popping up everywhere. So it was kind of a competitive field at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, just like the froyo phase and shops everywhere, which I'm kind of depressed that's over, to be honest.
I know, long live froyo. But anyway, back to cupcakes.
Back to cupcakes. So yeah, I designed the interior. I developed every recipe for the menu. I learned the headache of figuring out how to, you know, run a kitchen on a budget, and what we could do in advance. And there's just so many pieces to it. But I kind of designed the whole experience and it was just so much fun. And we were open. I used to go back when I was even at NYU, I would go back on the weekends, take the train to Boston. And it was, I mean, a very surreal, wonderful experience. So
It, you know, it was awesome. Again, I go back to this whole, like, it really was in your blood. Like, I mean, there's no denying it, and just your determination. We're going to talk about your degree, because I also, there's nuggets mm-hmm. from what you said that you and I have talked about in the past that I'm going to bring back up at a later point in the conversation, because you have totally listened to your heart and your gut so much mm-hmm. that it's led you on this path that we are celebrating today and that we're going to talk about in a second with your mm-hmm. position at Williams-Sonoma. But I also want everyone to notice how we almost got into that little, what I call bottle of wine conversations, just mentioning Froyo. You almost went down a side path.
I know. I could have.
And that's what I thought.
Bring me back. ADHD is just on fire. You got to bring me back.
Well, that's a Belle and Brian thing. We can just like find the side path and then not even remember why we're here doing this podcast. So I'm like, okay, the guide got to get us back. But I love that you almost went there. We're going to have a whole Froyo episode one day. Okay, fast forward. We're now in Williams-Sonoma's test kitchen. First, tell us what it was like to get the job at Williams-Sonoma. Then give us that day-to-day. I mean, you work at HQ. You are in the kitchen, like capital letters, T-H-E, the kitchen at Williams-Sonoma. And all of the beautiful equipment and plates and cake stands, all the stuff that passes through the retail shelves of Williams-Sonoma, you have a lot of hands-on mm-hmm. use with. So tell everybody about how you got there and then what's it like day to day?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, again, surreal that it's like such a dream job and I didn't even really know what I was getting into. I just graduated NYU and I was back in Boston and I got a call to come check out the test kitchen because I was working at ATK and I was like, sure, why not? So I come out and it was very serendipitous because at the time of it wasn't really an interview. I was just kind of visiting, but in the same day that I came, the test cook had given her notice. And I was kind of left in the test kitchen to cook and just hang out and no one was in it. I actually have a video on my Snapchat from that day in 2016. And I was offered a job that day. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, also I'd never been to San Francisco, mind you. I called my mom and I said, Mom, I'm moving to San Francisco to work in the Williams-Sonoma test kitchen. She was like, let's go, baby. So I was like, okay. So within 6 weeks, I was back here permanently as a test cook. And then that was 7.5 years ago, which is nuts. But it's an amazing company to work for. And to all the things you said leading into this is I get to do so much and it's very dynamic. So talking about my ADHD too, it works for me because every day is very different and every project is different. And I'm actually in every season at once, whether it's launches, recipe development, it's peppermint bark, it's turkey, it's, you know, summer tomatoes, whatever it is, it's all kind of happening, intermingled throughout the year. So, it's pretty spectacular. I'm very, very lucky to work here and work at this company.
I think one of the things we don't think about, so for us here at Bake From Scratch and at mm-hmm. Hoffman Media's other culinary properties, when we're developing recipes, like in one dimension, not one dimension, but we're creating a recipe. You are creating a recipe. And then you're also using that paring knife, and that's the paring knife that may be going into the knife collection that Williams-Sonoma is going to feature. You're the tentacles of your experience, creativity. You're not just creating a brownie recipe. You're creating a brownie recipe that is going to be baked in a Gold Touch Pro 9x9, and you're all is like you've got so many layers.
Big picture. The term I use probably 500 times a day is 360. So we are really looking at whatever project it is, 360 degrees at all times, to exactly your point. Of course, we are a retailer first, and we want to sell you the best, highest quality chef approved equipment for your kitchen to make cooking fun and make entertaining fun and enjoyable. So our job is really to, you know, in the test kitchen is to inspire our customers to want to use our product, whether that is the brownie pan or the new Le Creuset or innovation from Breville, whatever it is, you can look at it and it's especially these days, like so gorgeous, all of the machinery, but food is what is going to speak to people. So our job is to make beautiful, exciting, fun food so that people really want to buy our product and make it part of their daily routine.
Yeah. And I don't think people understand that when Chuck Williams started Williams Sonoma, his passion was not like the recipe. It was the equipment that he valued, like you just said, amazing, beautiful, top quality equipment that gives you the results for that good food in the kitchen.
Yes.
And that's such a driving force of what you're doing at Williams Sonoma and what products you're putting out for people to bring into their kitchens, because the results are there.
Exactly. Yeah. Chuck, our founder, Chuck Williams, he was such a product nerd, I would say, so passionate about product and also really passionate about eating and drinking and cooking.
Yes.
So we kind of brought those, or I would say, eating and cooking. You'll take that. That was me. I inserted myself, you know, and he really put those two pieces together to create Williams Sonoma and both those passions. So yeah, product is at the forefront of what we're doing, what we're talking about every day, of course, but
and one
there's no
thing
food
I
without
love,
product. There's no product without food.
Just so everyone listening, I know it's not a video podcast, so I have to give you the visual as I say it. But I am staring at a box for the Cuisinart 50th anniversary food processor that looks like an absolute throwback.
How good. So retro.
So retro. And if you go to the Chuck Williams Museum at the Culinary Institute of America in Napa, the Copia campus, they have his Cuisinart food processor in that collection. And it is the one that this looks exactly like that. So total throwback. And Williams Sonoma obviously has it for you to bring into your kitchen. But it's such it's like a nice reminder of where things started. You know, we always say this, how it started, how it's going. Well, you look at that throwback 50th anniversary piece of equipment and you just can't help but smile and celebrate and want it in the kitchen.
Yeah, I think that so much draw of food for people is the nostalgia piece of it. And I think what Cuisinart did was, you know, pick up on that and turn it, you know, translate it to a product. And I think it really worked. That thing is just, I mean, everyone knows that. Like, it's just, it's ingrained in all of our brains somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter how you were raised, people know that Cuisinart.
Oh, they do too.
Yeah.
Okay. So also, big round of applause for you. You just released Williams Sonoma's newest cookbook, At Home Favorites, and you co-authored it with your colleagues in the kitchen, Devin and Lena. Both amazing. You guys have such a great dynamic together. I love being in the actual kitchen with you, but I love seeing, again, the portrayal of the personalities on your social media. But not only that, this book is absolutely stunning and beautiful. And I want to tee up the conversation about the book to go back to what you were saying about your degree and how you really, give us the name of the degree again. I can't even remember all the words.
It's called Understanding Beauty Through Art and Food.
And when Belle and I were chatting months ago, you told me that the true passion for food and the true passion for what you do comes back to the art and beauty of it. And when I look at this book and the photos in here, I see it. You don't even have to use the words, but you are definitely using your degree. So tell your mom and dad it wasn't totally crazy.
It wasn't a total waste.
This book is one that I'm very happy to have in my kitchen, but I think everyone needs it. And tell us, like, At Home Favorites. So I know your dad and a bunch of chefs, people release their cookbooks. Is this meant to be not the not chef cookbook, but is the driver here is all of this is done in your home kitchen with equipment that Williams Sonoma has? Like, what came about from this?
Well, I'll mention quickly, Devin and Lena, who work in the test kitchen with me, I could not live my life without either of them. And they helped me write this book. So what's really cool is, you know, the recipes kind of come from all different areas of our lives. So you'll see lots of personality throughout in terms of like cooking personalities and the way we use ingredients differently. At Home Favorites is really based off of the food that we love to cook at home. It's as simple as that. So when our friends and family come over, when we're cooking for, you know, our loved ones, like, what are the recipes we make? A lot of them are rooted in memory, nostalgia, childhood, recipes we kind of grew up eating, maybe tweaked a little bit, modernized, jazzed up. a tad. But if you look through the recipes, a lot of them are really like homegrown. And yeah, we just wanted to create a book that was kind of break down the barriers of the Williams-Sonoma test kitchen and give you like the comfort that home provides and that home cooking provides.
Well, you guys did it. I mean, definitely did it. And when you said nostalgia, my brain immediately went to the go-to birthday sheet cake with chocolate frosting.
Right.
Just looking at the photo, I mean, there's candles, there's the sheet cake, and I can see any childhood family gathering in that one moment. You captured it.
Hey, we're both bakers, but sometimes I don't want to stack a cake all the time. I want easy, breezy, it's done, throw some chocolate frosting on it, and let's indulge and move on. But I think from, you know, you mentioned the art piece of it. I always say I'm an artist first because, you know, just as a kid and growing up, like food was always part of my life and I was always using food as a medium, but, I explored all different mediums and I just have such a, like love and passion for an image, and for light and color. And, you know, people make fun of me all the time because I'm like, I don't like that color. Even if it's like someone's wearing a t-shirt with the color, I'm like, I gotta look away. Or like in restaurants, I'm like, we gotta dim the lights or we gotta leave. Like, I'm just very sensitive to my senses. And I think a lot of it, because I just have so much love and appreciation and attention to detail when it comes to color and light. So this book was actually, I was able to really art direct it for the first time, which was exciting. So I think you'll see a lot of those, you know, it's reflected in the imagery.
Just even in the chapter openers, I'm looking at pizza, pasta, and breads and pasta dough and your hands as the dough is being moved through the pasta roller. And I know I want to get in this chapter. You're absolutely right about your artistic aesthetic and direction being first, but then the food in here, not only so beautiful, but so approachable. What's your favorite recipe or your, you know, the one that surprised you the most or one that you just couldn't wait to include?
Yeah, I think the approachability is a big piece of it. And that goes for the book and all of Williams-Sonoma content. Yeah. I want people to really like feel super comfortable to cook. I think for so long, you know, there's been barriers up between kitchens and a lot of imagery is very perfect and intimidating. And I'm like, if there's stuff on the counter, leave it there. Like there's a little mess and a little fun that I think makes it approachable because it's real. Again, like we put the test in Test Kitchen, we mess up all the time.
Yeah.
And we mess up so you don't have to. But if you do, it's no big deal. You know, there's so many ways to fix and learn. So that's a note on approachability. My favorite recipe, it has to be the cover, honestly. The Strozzapreti pomodoro with the pesto floater. It's one of the simplest tomato sauces you will ever make. And it's just so warm and cozy and silky and honestly, very, very nostalgic for me.
Well,
I'm glad it landed on the cover.
Well, I am
my cover
too.
Girl.
Your cover girl is actually leading us to this conversation that's going to take us back to like Bell, like deep, deep Bell level love here.
Yes.
But you and pasta are in the most exclusive and popular relationship in the world.
It's the longest relationship I've ever had, I would say.
And when you travel to Italy, I mean, holy moly, just give everybody the light. Yeah. I mean, Bell, follow her Instagram. I mean, you have to do that. So if we haven't referenced it enough yet in the chat, you definitely have got to get in on this Instagram and let the journey take you. Because when Bell arrives in Italy, holy moly, tune in, set an alarm, make sure you're getting every story in because it's a love language with pasta.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. So my dad is Italian. So I grew up half Italian, but almost whole Italian because that's how I learned how to cook. So I just have such an affinity for Italy. I mean, who doesn't? It's the most beautiful place on the planet that I have been to thus far. But it also, the food and the culture there really embodies what I try to and what I think I embody, which is just a sense of simplicity and joy and carefreeness. And they just get it. Like when you go into a restaurant in Italy, like back to my light and color thing, like the light's just right. The food is just seasoned perfectly. It's simple. You just feel at home, and it's like a warm hug. And that's anyone who walks into my kitchen, I want them to feel that way. Anyone who eats my food, I want them to feel that way. So I just really try to embody, you know, that Italian aspect. It's just fun, you know?
It is. It's
something, such joy.
In Italy, you do feel like you're sitting in everybody's grandmother's kitchen.
Correct.
Somehow.
Yeah,
like you feel the warm hug. You feel it. Even in the fine dining, you still have this moment of, I'm in somebody's home kitchen.
And I think it just goes to like the innate, like embedded love for feeding people just is illuminated when you're in Italy. And that's, you know, again, what I'm trying to do and what I've always wanted to do is just, there's nothing better than when someone cooks you something. And like, that is just love in a bowl or a plate or a pot, whatever it is. So I think it just, Italy really embodies that for me.
Well, I agree. And nothing says lovin' like a stuffin' from the oven, but we're talking about a muffin cup. You're called Stuffins.
That was a beautiful poem, by the way.
Thank you. I felt like I was being artistic and staying true to that spirit as I said that. Nothing says loving like Stuffins from the ovens. But Belle English created for your Gold Touch Pro muffin pan, the best way to serve that stuffing vibe that you so need on the Thanksgiving table. I'm going to let you tell everyone about it, but then I'm going to tell you something else that it has inspired. So go ahead, set it up. Tell us about this stuff and love.
You know, I don't even know if I can take credit, Brian. It might have been a store associate who, our store associates are such rock stars, and they came up with the most creative ways to use our food product. It's unbelievable. Ooey Gooey Pumpkin Bar, one example. We'll do another episode on that one.
Yes, we will.
But a stuffin is essentially, I brought it into the test kitchen and kind of, you know, perfected the method and got it out, shot and out online. But essentially it's putting your stuff in, no, excuse me, your stuffing, your stuffing in a muffin tin, and baking it that way. So people have individual servings of stuffings. Now I'm like, stuffing? Now I don't know how to say it correctly. Goodness.
Basically, stuffing in a muffin is what the world needed.
That is
the world
hard to
needed
say.
It. Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you why. My holy grail of Thanksgiving is the crispy, crunchy stuffing corners dunked in gravy. It's like the chip and dip of Thanksgiving, if you will.
I will.
So that kind of is what I love about these, because if you think about, you know, you get that like back 360, you get so much surface area is crispy because you're in the muffin tin, and then you get some nice soft bread in the center, but lots of crispy corners. So, and everyone kind of gets their individual ones. It's just a really fun way to think about stuffing. I would say for Thanksgiving, and you know, it's like our Super Bowl at Williams Sonoma, very passionate about it personally. And every year we're like, okay, we got to rethink Thanksgiving. Also a tongue twister. And so it takes a lot of creative juices to kind of think about how can you, you know, don't fix what's not broke, but how can you get creative with some of the Thanksgiving classics and the staples on the table, and stuffins is it.
It is it. And I have to tell you, you know, I have this love affair with the bundt pan too. Like I just, what Nordic ware does and bundt cakes. I love a bundt. So I took that inspo from the stuffin, and now we've got a stuffing bundt cake coming out in November for our bundt of the month. So all of the bakers out there that signed up for our monthly bundt of the month recipe.
Bundt of the month.
Inspired by, yes. So the credit totally goes to Williams-Sonoma, the associate that gave you the concept and your perfection. And then we took it and showed people, like, you know, the other ways you can add different herbs or different flavors
that.
Or yes. So you inspired my, like, reignited my love for stuffing. I do.
Oh my
gosh. Love stuffing.
Stuffing,
and
I
could eat Thanksgiving sides only, if we're being honest. Yeah, let's just sit for the sides.
I know. I'm not really into the turkey that much. Is it because I make 15 turkeys a year for the content? Probably, but I just
maybe that's
don't
why
care.
We feel that way. We eat Thanksgiving turkey in April and May when we're working on Thanksgiving content.
Yeah, I think I've literally 10 to 13 turkeys thus far I have cooked. So I think by the time I get to Thanksgiving Day, I'm like, can we like go out for sushi? Family's like, no. But I love that. I'm so happy to inspire you.
God, yeah.
What an honor.
Well,
but that's so fun. And you get, again, with the crispy edges. It's perfect.
Yes.
That's just you a get new the ratio. Savory, I love
yes,
it.
You get the crispy yep. edge. You get the soft center. And you can slice it and portion it kind of the way you're talking about the muffin cups, too. It's perfect.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Okay, so speaking of something else perfection, you didn't mention it because I wanted us to get to it now. It's in the cookbook. So in the new cookbook, you included the English family lasagna. And yes. I just have to ask you before you even start telling this isn't one of those like bait and switch things where you're like, I'm sharing the family recipe, but I changed 50 things and it's really not. Like, are we getting the English family no. lasagna? What's going down?
Do you know what's funny? I should keep more close to me, close to the chest. I share all my freaking recipes. I'm like, I have nothing left. No. But I actually, it's funny. I like don't even think about that. I just want everyone to make the best food possible. So this is literally the secret family recipe. The way it happened is my Nona, so my dad's mom, makes the best lasagna and always has, and was the one who taught me about the layers. And as a kid, I'd stand on the stool and, you know, dollop the ricotta. My dad made it a bolognese lasagna. One of the first recipes he ever taught me to cook was bolognese. And then I added a bechamel because, I mean, bechamel is like my favorite food group. So much so that bechamel Belle has become a nickname. I don't know if I love that
I was
one.
Just I was going to go with Belchamel. I was going to actually let like Belchamel.
That's a little more creative. Yeah, Belchamel is... She's a crazy one. And she was like, let's just throw it all together and make one massive, delicious, very goopy, cheesy, flavorful lasagna. And that's the English family lasagna that's in the cookbook. It is a labor of love. So, you know, set aside some time because there are a bunch of components, but dang, is it worth it? And I will tell you that that recipe is actually inspired by, this is actually great, Thanksgiving. Because in my family, the greatest eaters of all time, we start Thanksgiving with lasagna.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just the most absurd, indulgent thing you can do. But yeah, we start at about 3 to 5 p.m. We have a serving of lasagna. It's the Italian way. And then at like 9:30, we have Thanksgiving. And there's a nap in between you got to account for.
I knew
so
the nap
really
life
a lot.
Was, yeah, the nap life on Thanksgiving. And I like what you said about the labor of love, because I do think
it's
people,
a labor of love.
Yeah, you should understand that there are times recipes are quick and easy, and then there are
Correct.
Times recipes are labor of love. But that's what weekend days in the kitchen are for. I love
yes.
a good Saturday, Sunday,
yeah.
start the day, process things out, make it enjoyable. Because if you do cut corners or you cut your timeline, you're going to be scrambling, sweating, and dreading, and then you're not going to have fun, and
yeah.
you're probably going to mess up. So I love that you give yeah. kind of that fair notice that this is a labor of love. But dang,
really
a lasagna, yeah, it's worth the
it's
labor
so
of love. Yeah,
it is so good. I can't even tell you.
So let's talk baking for a minute, too, because there's
yes.
another recipe that you shared in baking school. So I was so glad that you shared it with the baking world. But the minute that I saw you do the marble chocolate chip cookies, I fell
yes.
in love. You, again, art first and then food, but something about that food
yeah.
is art. So everything's all one. Give us that whole magic and why that recipe is
it's
a must have.
It's all one. You get it right. It's all one.
Well, and I also, I need to argue with Devin a little bit about this.
Yeah.
She says in the book that she likes this thing to sit for a few days and it says develop
yeah.
more flavor. And probably in my
she
mind, it's
it.
Like, how, Devin? How?
Yeah.
How a hot you, cookie off the pan?
How do you resist? I
no,
know.
Medium
I,
rare all the way.
If you don't burn your mouth, you're doing it wrong.
Thank you.
I would say, okay, this is also a recipe that's a labor of love and kind of a pain in the you know what. But I will tell you, it's because I tested it so many dang times to get that perfect swirl, which was, it actually came to me in a dream. Sounds dramatic, but it literally did. I dreamt about this like super swirly cookie. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's so easy to do. And then I did it and it's apparently not that easy because to get the dough's chemistry right, because one's a chocolate dough, one's
yeah.
a bread flour dough.
Yeah.
I had to get the chemistry right so that the textures were the same and could kind of really like swirl in together while being different enough to stay separate. So it actually took a ton of tests. And even the way I kind of explained how to roll them together, you know, it's a process, but it's really fun and you can't really do it wrong. They're going to be delicious no matter what. But again, I'm such a freak for the final result and what it looks like. So, I went a little crazy on describing how to do it perfectly. But yeah, it really just came to me a dream. It's a brownie and a cookie. It's not that complicated of a concept. But I just think they're so beautiful and fun. It totally turned me on to putting bread, flour, and cookies to get more of a chew.
Yes.
Yeah, that really changed my life. You know, I've been making chocolate chip cookies since like I was born probably. And I hadn't really explored other flours because I was like, you know, again, don't fix what's not broke. Changing to bread flour, it really changed my life.
Bread flour in a cookie. I mean, that's a whole other episode too, because I also have fallen in love with that result. You get the chew, you get texture, it's soft in the center, crunchy on the edges. Oh, it's so good.
It's where it's at. So you'll see even in my most updated, it's on my Instagram too, the most updated chocolate chip cookie recipe, it's all bread flour.
There she
and
goes.
They're just, it's crispy on the outside, chewy on the inside.
If you don't like your chocolate chip cookies medium rare, you are not doing
I don't get it. Do you know, my father, he only likes, he likes all cookies, but his favorite is like really, really flat, crispy cookies.
Oh.
I'm like, ew, Dad, what's wrong? See, I didn't learn everything from him.
No, Belle is forging her own way in this culinary world.
I'm forging my own cookie path.
Yep, so, I'm funny. All about it. Belle Chamel and the bread flour cookie brigade. There's like a whole child story book.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of childhood books, and just kidding.
Yes.
What are you working on next? Give us the next thing coming up or what we could see coming out of Williams-Sonoma's Test Kitchen or for Belle. Like, give us a little nugget.
Okay. I think, well, it's the 25th anniversary of Peppermint Bark this year, which I'm
That's
sure
right.
you're well aware
yes.
of.
Yes.
Peppermint Bark is just the best thing ever. Williams-Sonoma has the original peppermint bark with the top secret recipe that no one will ever share. Not even with me.
I was going to say, you share everything, so they know not to.
I'm a big oversharer. That's so true. They'd be like, no, loose lips. She's going to tell everyone. But what we did do was create a lot of new innovation in our peppermint bark products. My favorite, and not just saying this to our baking friends who are listening, but are the new peppermint bark baking chips.
I was hoping you were going to say it.
Yes. They are the greatest. Do you agree?
Yes. That is what we needed. You know, we chop the bark now. I mean, I use it like even in just the OG straight up like sheets of the bark. I'm in there chopping that stuff to get it.
Me too.
Now we've got it like already done for us and we just have to add it to our cookies and our pound cakes and our whatever we want it to be in.
Not only do you skip that step, I actually hate chopping chocolate. It's like one of those weird kitchen tasks.
Test kitchen director hates it also. That is
really?
So funny. That's one thing she'll admit. Laura always says, I hate chopping chocolate.
It's one of those kitchen tasks. I'm just like, ugh, can we not? So this was actually a product of that. It's also, you know, when you bake with our original peppermint bark chopped up, you don't ever get even pieces. It's designed to be broken up and not evenly. So this is like, it distributes perfectly. It bakes perfectly. They're adorable. They're just good to snack on. You can decorate with them. I don't know. They're just like the cutest little perfect cubes. I'm obsessed with them. So we came up with three recipes, and I hope we will continue to create a million more, and I hope all of our customers create their own recipes, which I know they will. But the chocolate cookies, I actually made them today, not even lying. The chocolate cookies that are on the back of the package of the baking chips, are just a dark chocolate, chewy cookie, are just amazing, and I'm obsessed with them. And then top tier peppermint bark chip recipe thus far are the peppermint cream brownies.
Oh, yes.
Which are like a dark, chewy brownie, peppermint cream, chocolate ganache with the chips all up in there. Just divine.
Gosh. I feel like we could just even let silence like close out our episode now because you ended it with like the perfect. Divine. That's like the baker's call to action. If your baking soul is not moved by that description of the brownies, I'm definitely sitting here with my mouth watering and thinking, I got to get those baking chips out and get my brownies on the way too. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're delicious. So I'm really excited. I think the 25th anniversary, we have a ton of other products coming out too. So keep an eye out in stores and online because we have a lot of exciting peppermint bark treats up our sleeves, let me tell you.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. And Belle, I am so grateful you joined us here on The Crumb. This is so long overdue. This could be a 5-part series, and I think it probably needs
I'm
to
sorry,
be.
I blab. I can't help it.
I am too. That's, you get blabbers in the room, and we just have to talk, testify, and share.
Yeah, so
and that's what's going on.
If you made it this far, you should win a prize.
Visit williamsonoma.com/Belle's Secret Surprise Recipe and you've made it.
You win peppermint bark if you've made it this far in this podcast. So thank you.
Well, Belle, next time we're going to do it in the kitchen together. Then there's going to be a bottle
please.
Of wine and all the fun we know we have every time.
I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. And I can't wait to listen to the rest and, you know, bake together soon.
We will for sure. Thanks for being on.
Okay. Thank you.
Y'all, we could have 3 episodes of The Crumb and still not run out of things to say. That was so much fun. And I am so grateful that Belle took time out of her day to join us here on The Crumb. I hope that you have ordered the beautiful new book from Williams-Sonoma and the team that Belle works with. I love it. It's in my kitchen and I cannot wait to make every single thing in there. And I know you will also love it too. So get your copy of the book on the way today. And then we'll have to get Belle back for another episode soon to keep that conversation going. But that's all I've got for today. Bakers, it's your turn. Preheat your ovens. It's time to bake. I'll chat with you next time here on The Crumb. If you liked our podcast, please rate, subscribe, and tell a friend about us. And to keep up with my baking endeavors, follow me on Instagram at Brian Hart Hoffman. You can also follow Bake From Scratch at The Bake Feed. And for online recipes and fresh baking content, be sure to visit our website, bakefromscratch.com. We even have a newsletter called Preheat to get you ready for all the baking that lies ahead. Finally, for real-life baking inspiration, grab a copy of the magazine on newsstands or sign up for a subscription and we'll mail the magazine to you with each and every new issue.